How's everyone doing tonight? Better. Put up the sound panels. They took the clock off the wall, so I'm going to try to keep this where we can see. What we're going to do, continue tonight. If you remember, we're studying Leviticus 23, kind of where it all started. And the last time was at the first, you don't have to turn to Leviticus tonight, but not 23, but we had started on the first of the appointed celebrations that God gave to the nation of Israel, which was the Sabbath. And we kind of wanted to see what the Sabbath was and what it means to us in the New Testament church age. And if you remember, we learned about this teaching, I guess, that God gave, and it's called progressive revelation, how he starts off with one thought, or one idea, and then he builds on it as he goes through the different times he talks about it throughout history and throughout the Bible. So every time it's mentioned in the Bible, there's a little bit more added to it. And we kind of looked at the difference between the Sabbath and what we celebrate today is the Lord's Day, and the difference between Israel and the church. And we don't ever want to get confused about what the Sabbath is. So that's what I hope we're going to do with this study and work on it tonight, and we'll probably have one more lesson in the future. But if you remember, the Sabbath was first talked about in Genesis. You know, God, during creation, Genesis chapter 2, God created the world in 6 days. And then on the seventh day, he rested from all his work, and he set that day aside and sanctified it and made it holy. Well, by doing that, he said, this day is something special. And that's all we heard about it, all the way for thousands of years later until the nation of Israel was born. And when they were born, they come out of exile when Moses led them away from Egypt. The next time we hear about it is in Exodus 16, and when they were gathering manna. And when they were out doing this, he said, look, I'm going to provide for you, because they were grumbling about starving to death in the desert, not having nothing to eat. And he said, I want to give you food. But there's conditions upon it. You're going to have this gathered. It's going to fall down from heaven. Every day you go out from your tents, you're going to find this white stuff laying on the ground. You're going to gather up a certain amount of it and eat it, but only get one day's rations. If you gathered more of it, it would rot. It became wormy. It stank. They had to throw it out. Couldn't even stand the smell of it. All but the sixth day. Because God told him, says, I want you to trust me in taking care of you and giving you provisions. So on the sixth day, he says, the seventh day, he said, because I rested on the seventh day of creation, I want you to rest and trust me to give you what you need. So on the sixth day, you gather twice as much food. And there's really a double miracle in it, because first, it didn't rot, and it also allowed them, and it didn't stink and all that, and God provided for them. So on the sixth day was the only day you could gather twice as much for yourself, for your family, and you brought it in. And that was the first time we heard about the Sabbath. And then it went on, and the other times it's mentioned when God gave the Ten Commandments to Moses, and every time there's a little bit more added to it. And you'll, if you recall, when you read through chapter 24 there in Exodus about the Ten Commandments, there's more given to that one commandment than anything else in the ten. So we know that it is important to God. And we're going to keep building on that. I think last time we got up to Exodus 31, which is where we're going to turn to tonight. And I believe we got started, but I'm going to probably just go back through that a little bit. So if you want to turn there, you can follow along. But we're going to continue with this idea of the Sabbath, what it means, and how God progressively is expounding on his word and what it means to the nation of Israel. But as for you, speak to the sons of Israel saying, you shall surely observe my Sabbath. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Therefore you are to observe the Sabbath, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. So the sons of Israel shall observe the Sabbath to celebrate the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, but on the seventh day he ceased from his labor and was refreshed. And when he had finished speaking with him upon Mount Sinai, he gave Moses the two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written by the finger of God. Now, if you remember from the time they started gathering manna, God added through there. Soon it was just starting off, you should do no work. And then he said, include your servants in this. And then he said, include your animals in this. So the whole nation was getting to be having this complete rest. And so let's look at Exodus 31 for a minute. See the differences that he's added in here. First, you want to notice that this passage refers to the Sabbath as my Sabbath. God's telling us that these are his. The Sabbaths which Israel ought to observe are the Lord's. Now, this is undoubtedly related to the Sabbath rest of God after creation that is referred to once again in verse 17. Second, the observance of the Sabbath is extended in time, so it becomes a permanent one throughout all the generations for Israel. The observance of the Sabbath is declared to be a sign of the Mosaic covenant between God and his chosen people. The obligation is restricted to the Israelites, because he says it's a sign between me and you. Now, this is kind of where we start distinguishing. Gentiles or no one outside the nation of Israel had to observe this at this time. And so that's why we don't need to get confused today between what is the Sabbath, which is Saturday, the last day of the week, what we call Saturday, or our day of worship, Sunday, which is the first day of the week. In verse 13, he continues, says, it is holy to you. The fact that this commandment comes virtually at the middle of the commandments in the Ten Commandments is bridging Israel's obligation to God and with their duties to men. It confirms to the pattern of the treaties of the ancient Near East. And note that the reiteration of the fourth commandment is God's final word of given of the Mosaic covenant on Mount Sinai. So right at the end here, right before Moses comes down, God has given him all the law. He's given him the whole Ten Commandments of everything of the basic that he wants him to do. But he goes back and says, just as a reminder, the last thing I want to tell you is to keep my Sabbath and keep them holy. So again, it just points to the importance of it. The importance of obeying this commandment is emphatically stressed. Since the Sabbath observance is a sign of the covenant, observing the Sabbath was the Israelites' pledge to keep the whole law. To break this commandment was to reject all the law, and consequently, the obedience of this commandment was vitally important. The urgency of the obedience is stressed by the word surely that God uses. He says, surely you shall observe my Sabbaths. And verse 13 is even more urgent in the light that the death penalty, which is prescribed for violation of the Sabbath, was twice stated. Now, we're not going to really cover this, but later on in Numbers, there was a man actually put to death for gathering sticks on the Sabbath. And some of you may remember that. But why is this so important to us now? Because a violation of the law is a death penalty. It's pretty severe. It's one of the few times we see in the early parts of the Bible where God has judgment on people for breaking the laws of God. And if we did that today, we'd all be dead right now. But there's a reason for this, and we'll talk about this more in the future, but I'm going to say a little bit about it now. When Christ came upon the earth, what did he say? He said, I did not come to do away with the law, but I came to fulfill it. And violation of God's law is death. And everybody says, well, I'm a New Testament saint, or I'm not under the law. You're just following legalism. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to teach anything heretical here, but everybody is under the law. God's word doesn't change. You're either obey the law perfectly, which we know no man can, or you be judged by the law. And that's what Christ did for us. When he came, he fulfilled the law perfectly in our place. He was the perfect man, come in human flesh, and the perfect God, because it only took a holy and righteous God to die in our place to satisfy God's righteousness. And that's why we're either in Christ or we're out of Christ. We're either, he either fulfilled the law, God's righteousness for us, or we don't believe in him, we're not in Christ, and then we're going to be judged by the law, and the penalty is death. For the penalty of sin is death. We know that from the writings of Paul in the New Testament. So we'll learn about that, more about that in the future. But the Sabbath is said to be profaned by anyone who works on this sacred day. Now, are we to say that work is profane? In the sense that work is maybe common or an everyday substance, then the answer is yes, it is, because it's just common. But work in itself is not bad, because even God worked 6 days to create the heavens and the earth. But neither is it holy in the sense that it was special and set apart. For that which is holy is set apart and distinct, put to a different use. Thus God distinguished the seventh day by resting. As opposed to working, Israel must do likewise, so that what happened on the seventh day was to be different, and somehow from what happened on any other day. What God did is gave them an example. And he wanted them to follow his example. And because he did this, he rested on the seventh day. And he knew that they were going to follow this. And they were going to be different and shine to the world. And show them that they're going to be the peculiar people, the light of the world. And so is the church today. The purpose of Israel's Sabbath, was to teach them about sanctification. And namely, their sanctification. God said that Israel was to observe the Sabbath perpetually, in quotes, that you might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Just as God had set the seventh day apart from the other six at creation, so he had set Israel apart by his divine calling and their deliverance at the Exodus. The godly Israelite who wished to observe the Sabbath with his whole heart would meditate on what God intended him to do in order to keep the Sabbath as a holy day. In doing so, he would also be learning much about what it meant for him to keep himself holy as well. The keeping of the Sabbath thus became an object lesson in sanctification. Now that kind of brings us, it's not the end of what the Bible's talking about, the Sabbath is mentioned in several other places. In Exodus 34, we have things added like in plowing time and in harvest time, you shall cease your work. And I'm just going to read a couple of these so you don't really have to turn to them. But it just means that how important it is that even if you're trying to get in 20 acres of corn and you ain't got it done by Friday afternoon, you're going to have to wait till Sunday morning to start work again. Because at sundown on Friday, that was the beginning of the Sabbath, and you had to stop work because of the commandment of God. And to the Israelite, this is very important because they knew that the death penalty was given for anyone who violated this. And then in Exodus 35, it's added again, it said, no fire can be kindled on the Sabbath in an Israelite home. Now, we learned a little bit about this back in Exodus 16. You remember, they could not cook or build a fire to even boil the manna or whatever, how they decide to eat it. But here is emphatically stated and prohibited, no fire shall be built on the Sabbath day. because it was like work of creation. And again, in Leviticus 23, which we're studying out of, it tells us that there should be a holy convocation on every Sabbath. That's a gathering of the people together, to come together to worship God. So you do it on the weekly Sabbath, and what we're going to learn about in a little bit, we do it on the yearly Sabbath. And then in Leviticus 25, which we're going to skip over right now and come back to in just a second, but we learn about the Sabbath as it's God tells us about involving the land. And in Numbers, we read where the sacrifice for the Sabbath day become two male lambs, which is prescribed. So, and it's interesting that you sacrifice the lambs on the Sabbath, because nowhere in the law is a lamb ever done for a sin offering. The lamb is only there as a substitute offering. And it's kind of interesting as we go in and learn about how Christ fulfilled everything. Christ, you know, we know John told us, you know, behold the Lamb of God. There was never a lamb. It's always bulls and goats that were sacrificed for sins. But Christ paid for our sins as a substitute. And that's an interesting study on its own, if you look at that. Again, then later on in Deuteronomy, which is given of the second law, that's what the word Deuteronomy means, basically, is when it's translated from in the Greek text. It means the second law. We read, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant, or your ox, or your donkey, or any of your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you, so that your male and your female servant may rest as well as you. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore your Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. And that's in Deuteronomy 5. Now, essentially, this passage is a reiteration of the Ten Commandments spoken by Moses in the light of Israel's upcoming entrance into the land of Canaan. But there are a few changes and differences between this text and the one we read in Exodus 20 about the Ten Commandments. This time, if you'll notice, that the commandment begins with the word observe rather than remember. Up until now, you were just to remember what God did back in Genesis during the creation. But now it's become something more. It's that covenant sign between Israel and God for all the generations forever. So now we are to observe the day. Also included is the ox and the ass. They're added to the animal list of which cannot do no work on the Sabbath. And the statements of the manservant and the maidservant, as well as the sojourners that stay with you. So basically, the whole nation's going to shut down. You can't allow your animals to work. You can't work. No one, if I'm coming into your house and you're a good Jew, I'm not supposed to work, even though I may be a Gentile. No, the whole nation shut down on the Sabbath to show the rest of the world that they are different. They're worshiping God, and this is why. Now, the basis for observing the Sabbath is different in Exodus. For the basis of the Sabbath was for creation, rest of God. But in Deuteronomy, it is Israel's slavery and release from Egypt that they talk about. In Exodus, the focus was on creation. But in Deuteronomy here, it's talking about redemption. In the first given of the fourth commandment, Israel is instructed to imitate God in his rest. But in the second, Israel is to imitate God in his redemption and his compassion on the oppressed. Thus, just as they were given rest from their slavery, so the Israelites must give their slaves and servants and animals rest. And then later on, you know, we got a couple of mentions in Psalms about how to worship on the Sabbath. And a good interesting thing in Isaiah 56, there's two other people added to this. And it's talking about how you're blessed if you observe and keep the Sabbaths of God. But in Isaiah 56, we hear about two other people, the foreigner and the eunuch. And so who keep the Sabbath. I promise that those blessings, most significant and encouraging to them. The eunuch will not need to bear children to carry on their name, for God will give them an everlasting name. And then again, the foreigner will no longer be an outsider, and that's us as Gentiles, but will be joined with God and with his people. That's got to be a great comfort to all of us as we stand here today. Now let's turn back, if you would. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, so we might finish early tonight. But turn back to Leviticus. And we'll go back to 25. I want to read part of it here, if you just bear with me. Starting in chapter 25, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in Mount Sinai, saying, speaking to the children of Israel, and saying to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. 6 years thou shalt sow thy fields, and 6 years thou shalt prune thy vineyard, and gather in the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy fields nor prune thy vineyards. That which groweth of its own accord of thy harvest thou shalt not reap, neither gather the grapes of thy vineyard undressed, for it is a year of rest unto the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you, for thee and for thy servants and for thy maid and for thy hired servant, and for the stranger that sojourneth with thee, and for the cattle and for the beasts that are in the land, they all shall increase thereof by meat. And thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee, 7 times 7 years, and the space of 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, in the day of atonement, shall you make a trumpet sound throughout all your land. And you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. And it shall be a jubilee unto you. And you shall return every man unto his possession. And you shall return every man unto his family. A jubilee shall be that 50th year be unto you. You shall not sow, neither reap that which groweth of itself in it, nor gather the grapes of it as thy vine undressed. For it is the jubilee. It shall be holy unto you. You shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. And in the year of this jubilee, you shall return every man unto his possession. And if thou sell aught not thy neighbor, or buyest aught thy neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another, according to the number of the years after the jubilee. Thou shalt buy thy neighbor, and according to the number of years of the fruits he shall sell unto thee. According to the multitude of years, thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of the years of the fruits doth he sell unto thee. You shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God, for I am the Lord your God. Wherefore you shall do my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and you shall dwell in the land in safety. And the land shall yield her fruit, and you shall eat your fill, and dwell there in safety. And if you shall say, what shall we eat the seventh year? Behold, we shall not sow, nor gather in our increase. Now, here's where God's making his promise again. He says, then I will command my blessing upon you in the 6th year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And you shall sow the 8th year, and eat yet of the old fruit until the 9th year. Until the fruits come in, you shall eat of the old store. The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine. For you are strangers and sojourners with me. In all the land of your possessions, you shall grant a redemption for the land. We'll stop right there. And God's telling them, now you're going to take this idea of the Sabbath. I've told you not to, just to trust me, this one day, don't gather food. And then he builds upon it. Then he makes it one of the Decalogue of the Ten Commandments. He says, take this and observe it. And then again in 31, right before he tells us they go into the land of promise, he says, do this forever. This is going to be a covenant sign for us. And here he expounds even more. Now it's going to the land of the promised land and how they're going to act when they dwell in it. And so every 7 years, just like on the seventh day, there's going to be a rest for the land. Now the land of Canaan, the promised land of Israel, was consistently viewed in the Old Testament as a place of God's presence and his blessings. Now this begins at the very outset of divine revelation in the book of Genesis. In chapter 2 and 3, the Garden of Eden was, as it were, the kind of farm, or at least an orchard. God placed Adam and Eve there to keep the garden and to enjoy its blessings. And these blessings included fellowship with God, who came to walk with them in the garden, and the blessings of everlasting life, the result of eating from the fruit of the tree of life. To enjoy these blessings, all this couple had to do was to keep one commandment, to refrain from eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When they disobeyed and ate of this fruit, they were expelled from the garden and kept from eating the tree of life in particular. Now, the parallels between the Garden of Eden and the promised land of Canaan and the land of milk and honey are not really difficult to follow and compare. For now, let us simply observe that the earth was created with a special place for man, where God's presence and his blessings were available. To enjoy these blessings, man had to obey God's commands, and to be expelled to this place was to be deprived from his blessings. Abraham came to grasp the fact that the promised land was the place of God's special blessings too. For God called Abram to leave his land and to go into the place that he would show him. And the Abrahamic covenant consisted of three particular promises. It is a promise of land, the promise of a seed, and the promise of a blessing. And these three promises were rightly understood to be somehow bound together, inseparable. Now, during Abraham's life, he built altars and called on the name of the Lord, but only in the land of promise. And at his death, Abraham's last two recorded acts had to do with the land. In chapter 23 of Genesis, Abraham purchased a family burial site in the land of promise. And then again in chapter 24, Abraham gave solemn instructions to his servant concerning how he was to procure a wife for his son Isaac. And he told him, he said, go bring a wife back to him, but under no circumstance will you take her or take him out of the land. And of course, we know that what happened with that story. But Abraham knew that God's promises were connected with this land that he was taking him to, where he told him that all the future blessings were going to come out of. And Jacob, Abraham's grandson, learned that this land of promise was a very special place also, the place of God's presence and blessings. Because of his deception and deceit, Jacob was forced to flee from the promised land, to live in the very place which Abraham warned his servant not to take Isaac. Nevertheless, God appeared to Jacob before he had left the land of promise, and he had a dream. And during that dream, if you remember, it said a ladder was set on the earth with its top reaching up into heaven, and behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending upon it. And you read about that in Genesis 28. Now, we're going to remember that because when we get into our next lesson, we're going to see how Christ was a type of this land, the promises of God, where he dwells in. And in the vision, God reiterated his covenant, which he had made with Abraham and Isaac. And he promised to be with Jacob wherever he went and to bring him once again to this land where he would bless him. Jacob's response to his dream was very significant. It said, then Jacob awoke, and I'm quoting now from Genesis 28, then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Now, during this, I mentioned a while ago about the land having every 7 years, and there's patterns of seven that run all through the Bible. But we're going to see a little bit here. God's, well, we know that man you could work 6 days, rest on the seventh. Now we're learning about the land. And it's in the same pattern. Every seven, there's going to be a rest. So you can work your land for 6 years, and then there's going to be a rest. And it goes all the way from that first day where they gather manna in Exodus 16, just one time, one day out of the week, trust me to give you what you need. But here's a big leap. I mean, Lois, you're a gardener. Could you plant your seeds and wait 2 years and still lead on that one crop? You'd have to have a good bumper. You'd have to have a good bumper crop that year. And I only know Lois. I'm sure there's more gardeners in here, but me and her talk about growing tomatoes and onions and stuff. So this is a big leap of faith right here, but this is what God's telling me. And he told Israel, remember back in Exodus, he said, how long are you going to not listen to me and trust my word? Just do what I say and trust me to take care of you. And here it is. And it's not that they couldn't eat. They had to eat. But he gave them on that 6 year the bumper crop that they knew that they was going to carry them out through 2.5 to 3 years later. So that's a big leap of faith. And whatever grew wild, they just couldn't work at it. Whatever grew wild, you know, the volunteers come up in your garden, the wheat would reseed, the grapes are going to grow, the apples, whatever they grew in Israel that time. You could pick them and eat them, but there's just no commerce involved. You wasn't going to plant. You wasn't going to harvest. You wasn't going to take it to market and sell it, but you could eat it. And God, we just read in 25 there, God says, the poor people can come eat it. Anybody staying with you could come eat it. The beasts of the field could come eat it. It's for the whole earth to rest upon or to eat upon that increase that I'm going to provide. Now, there's one more thing here, and it's kind of just hinted at in the Bible, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you emphatically that it's here. But the Jewish rabbis believed this, and they taught it, and it makes sense to a pattern, but I don't want you to take it as dogmatic. But we got the earth, and I only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to have to move on. But in the same pattern, what's going to happen during the millennial reign? There's going to be a Sabbath rest to the whole earth. Because that we know that from Isaiah, and even Paul tells us in Romans, said all creation's waiting for the redemption that's coming. So the earth will have its Sabbath rest also. And because they see this, and that's one reason they didn't really believe Christ was the Messiah at the time, because it didn't match up with prophecy the way they saw. You know, they said the kingdom is going to be restored, you know, and you know all this is going to happen. So they just didn't see the suffering servant coming and dying. That wasn't the Messiah to them. So, and this is part of it. Because we know in Isaiah it says there's going to be no more curse. It's going to be reversed. Animals are going to stop eating each other. We're going to stop the killing. There's going to be a perfect 1,000-year millennium, and that'll be the rest. We know that when Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, when Adam sinned, he broke God's Sabbath. That's why they were kicked out of the garden. So the Sabbath was broken. So, and this is where I cannot prove it, but I'm just going to tell you about it. They believe that from their 6,000 years for the earth to live by, or be, or not live by, but to be sin cursed, then that millennial reign is going to come in the seventh thousandth year. If I'm saying that right. But that doesn't mean that we're going to wait, because right now, if you go by like the Jewish calendar, by the genealogies, The earth is right around 6,000 years old right now. It's anywhere from, depending on how you read it, 5,800 to 6,400 years old, if you believe in the young creation, which I do. So, and I'm not saying we got 700-800 years to play around with. We know we got, we live like Christ is coming back tonight. The preeminent Christ is coming. I mean, he's going to be here. So we don't stop living like we got time to waste. But there may one day, whether it's now in 1,000 years, we don't know. But there will be a Sabbath rest for the whole earth. And that's when the millennial reign will come. Now, if that timetable is true, of course, Peter tells us that a day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years like a day. That means Christ is up there now and God says, hey, tomorrow you're going back. So it's quick. It's coming. That's just a little side note there. Who knows? It's been the last couple of minutes right quick. Who can tell me why Israel went into captivity?
It didn't follow the Sabbath rest for the land.
Now, that was part of the judgment, but they were, you know, involved in idolatry, child sacrifice, everything. I mean, everything they weren't supposed to be doing. But God punished them. And you know, turn quickly, if you can, to... ain't got time to read all of them, but let's do 2 Chronicles, I guess, would be the best one because I only got a few minutes. 2 Chronicles 36. And I think around verse 20. 2 Chronicles 36, verse 20. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, when they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. For as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. Now, when Daniel was reading the book of Jeremiah, he saw that they would be in captivity for 70 years. Now, Jeremiah predicted that because they were not obeying the laws of God. And remember, we talked about the Israelite as itself. When he enjoyed the Sabbath, when he would observe and sanctify the Sabbath, he would know that he was supposed to sanctify himself, and not only to obey the Sabbath, but to obey the whole law of God. Because the Sabbath was that covenant between Israel and God himself. So when he violated the Sabbath, he violated the whole law. So basically, we got a rest for the land every 7 years. And what did you say, Dave? How many years was it? 490? 490. Because basically, the time from David after his reign all the way up to the exile is approximately 490 years. Now, 7 times 7 is 49, 7 times 70, 490. So that's where God got the 70 years from. They violated 490 years of Sabbath breaking. So God said, okay, you're going into captivity. He told them in Leviticus. He told them in Deuteronomy, you violate my principles, you violate my Sabbaths, you'll be expelled from the land. And that's exactly what he did. I got 8:01, so I better stop. But that brings us up kind of what the Sabbath is in the Old Testament, in a nutshell. Next time, we're going to go into the New Testament and see what the Sabbath means to the church and how Christ fulfills it.